Blog Talk Radio.
What an opening. Barbara Streisand to this great show on Tuesdays. Make note, next Monday we'll be doing the show same time. Tuesdays, July 4th. It's American Sports History Podcast, live from Cleveland, Ohio, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Peter Ray. Yours truly producing it. 2,500 miles to the west in Los Angeles, Mark Mancini, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 30 minutes goes by quick. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, more of him, less of me. First of all, the threes, Peter. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And this great guest is coming back in. As much as the other great guest you have there, Billy North, you're lining them up, my brother, in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter J. Period R E A, and it, my email address is there. If people would subscribe, I'd appreciate it. And you're absolutely right. Tonight's guest. Every 4 weeks, we have a wonderful talk about NFL history. Tonight's guest is the author of four tremendous sports history books: Bench Bosses, the NHL's Coaching Elite 2015, Art of the Dealers, the NHL's Greatest General Managers 2017, Lords of the Gridiron, College Football's Greatest Coaches 2019, and the book we're continuing to talk about tonight, Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches 2022. Welcome to the show, Mr. Matthew DiBiase.
Peter, Mark, it's so great to be back again, man. It's always an honor and a privilege to be on this show and just keep bringing back the great coaches of yesteryear and all of that. It's always fun and magnificent.
Right. Well, it's you've done all this work and you know NFL history inside and out, and that's what this show is all about, is sports history. So it's wonderful having you on tonight. We're going to talk about the next two coaches in your list, Bill Parcells and Bill Cowher. So what can you say about Bill Parcells?
I'll tell you something. When my book came out last September, it was coming up on the one-year anniversary of it, the one thing people have gotten on my case about is, why do I have Bill Parcells ranked 20th instead of higher? And according to my rating system, I've had to answer more questions about him than any other coach. And I'll tell you this. I mean, yeah, Bill Parcells coached two Super Bowl winners with the Giants. He actually restored the Giants back to greatness after nearly over 20, that last time they had been in an NFL championship game was in 1963, a 23-year gap between championship game appearances. And, he led them to two Super Bowl victories. And yet, the reason why he's in the top 20 is that, yeah, he took the Giants higher than they had ever been before in decades. And he took the New England Patriots to their second Super Bowl appearance. and he helped revive, for a time, he worked with the New York Jets, got them, on a winning track for a brief time, and then with the Dallas Cowboys, got them on a winning track after a slump. But the problem with Parcells was, yeah, he could take them high, but he never could maintain the high. And that was the one thing that separated him from his protege, his brightest protege, Bill Belichick. Belichick always could maintain the high for a long period of time. For, I mean, for, for like 15 straight years, if I recall correctly, 15, 16 straight years of playoff appearances. And that's the one thing he could do that Parcells could not do. With Parcells, there was all, after every high, there was a drop-off. Like, for example, their Super Bowl season in 1986 where they beat the Denver Broncos. They won the Super Bowl. Then the following season, a 6-9 record and a last-place finish in the NFC East. And then the following season, he got them back on a winning track, but guess what? They failed to make the playoffs. There was a drop-off. And then you got 89, but they didn't. They still couldn't reach the Super Bowl. Finally, in 1990, they won the Super Bowl again. That was his greatest season with the Giants, 13-3. But you see, in between, his peak period, the third category, the BQ value, which measures your best five consecutive years, 86 to 90 was his best five-year period, and yet still he had that losing season and last-place finish and another failure to make the playoffs. So you see, that's why I can't equate Bill Parcells on the same level as Bill Belichick or George Halas or Paul Brown or Vince Lombardi or Don Shula or Chuck Knoll, for that matter, because Parcells never could sustain it. He could get like one super great season, and then there would be a drop-off. His first season, second season with the New England Patriots, he did a turnaround. He started off with a 5-11 record with the Patriots, got him to 10-6, and then guess what? Dropped right back to 6-10. Then the following season, he takes him to the Super Bowl again, where he loses. Inconsistency. And that's why I just can't put Bill Parcells in the top 10, those bouts of inconsistency. His 3 years with the Jets. Okay, he got him to 9-7, then he took him to 12-4, one of their best performances, in a long time for the Jets. And then guess what? After that season, they dropped off to 8-8. I mean, they were battling injuries, but again, inconsistency. With the Dallas Cowboys, his first season there in Dallas in 03, takes him to a 10-6 record and a playoff appearance. But he never let the next two seasons, 6-10, drop off to 6-10, then 9-7, a winning season, but no playoff appearance. And then, again, just another 9-7 and an early elimination in the playoffs. It just, that was his Achilles heel. That's why I can't put Parcells and not in the top 15 and not in the top 10, those bouts of inconsistency. And yet, the man knew how to turn teams around. I mean, he knew how to build, he knew how to make winners. Not just as a coach, but also working in the front office. Because with New England and the Jets and Dallas, he had much more control over personnel than what he did with the Giants there. That's one of the reasons why he left the Giants, because he did not have total control. And he wanted total control in the worst way, like Lombardi had total control, and like other coaches had total control, like Paul Brown and all of that. And that's why he left the Giants. And he was great at building personnel. He developed, he had his own coaching tree. I mean, Bill Belichick was his greatest pupil. Then you had, Peyton, with the New Orleans, and then you had, Tom Coughlin there. I mean, I remember someone posted on Facebook asking to compare Bill Walsh's coaching tree with Parcells's, and I said no contest. It was Bill Walsh, and I agree with that, because Walsh's tree is far more extensive. Not just the first generation, but second generation, now third generation coaches, learning from Walsh. Whereas Parcells is a little bit more limited, and we're still awaiting results for the next generation, as it were. But still, you have to give Parcells his due. A thing about Parcells is, this is another thing, the difference between why Belichick exceeded Parcells, is that Belichick knew how to kind of ease up a little bit. He knew when to switch it off. The problem with Parcells was he couldn't switch it off. He was very unrelenting in his approach. And sometimes that could wear on you. And that's why there was always that drop-off, because It just after a while, if you keep getting battered and all that, you become a little bit numb to it. And I think that's what happened in Parcells' interest. He really didn't know how to ease up a tad. It was always high pressure. He's always been a very unrelenting personality. I mean, to play for Bill Parcells, you had to have absolute nerves to steel, and you had to be willing to suffer a bit. The paraphrase, an old ancient Greek playwright, the phrase was, to be a man, one was obliged to suffer. Well, to be a player for Bill Parcells, you were obliged to suffer. And if you didn't mind, taking your suffering in your lumps, you could thrive under Parcells. But there were certain players who really couldn't thrive under that. And in a sense, if you couldn't take it, you eventually left. I mean, there was always a lot of turnover with Parcells' rosters because he got rid of those who were unwilling to take his high pressure, his pressure cooker approach. And those who stayed were the ones, they had the thick hide. They had the psychological steel to endure his poundings and rise to his standard and execute to his standard and all of that. And I think that was the measure of Bill Parcells.
Yeah, now looking at my notes, in memory, he was definitely entertaining. Of course, it's NFL is entertainment, and he was an entertaining guy. His given name was Dwayne. He took the name Bill, and you just described him as having a confrontational personality. As a young guy, he had the habit of mouthing off. You described him as having bovine stubbornness. Whoa, what a description. Now, some of the players he had, Lawrence Taylor, Phil Sims,
yeah,
Joe Morris, Mark Bavero, and he ended the Giants' 30-year title drought, 1986, major accomplishment. The Gatorade bath, I don't know if that started with him, but he participated in that. Jeff Hostetler, he had Drew Bledsoe with the Patriots, Vinny Testaverde with the Jets, Cowboys, he worked for Jerry Jones. Now, you have some really good quotes in the book. Here's the first one. Bill Parcells spent his entire coaching stint with the Giants riding herd on Lawrence Taylor, using every psychological ploy to keep LT focused and hungry. But Taylor always found a way to cause consternation with the Giants coaching staff. He could party all night, fall asleep during film sessions, and yet answer every defensive scheme quiz perfectly. After a brilliant rookie season, LT succumbed to drugs and didn't clean up until 1987. As time passed, there was a perception that there was one set of rules for Lawrence Taylor and another set for everyone else. Another quote, in his rookie year as head coach, Bill Parcells did not hesitate to draw blood. To paraphrase the ancient Greek playwright Aeschylus, to play for Bill Parcells, one was obliged to suffer. Bill Parcells was confrontational, combative, even in situations which didn't require it. Those whom he could not motivate or manipulate or those whom he perceived as such were cruelly diminished and or dismissed. He later explained unrepentantly, "See, whatever I give as a coach, I took as a player. It happened to me, and if it happened to me and I turned out all right, then my players can take it too. The only players I hurt with my words are ones with inflated opinions of their ability." Playing for Bill Parcells was gridiron Darwinism, and it required a tough hide and nerves of steel.
Yeah.
Those who survived and endured later thrived and succeeded. Those who did not eventually wilted and were waived. Reserve quarterback Jeff Rutledge, who began his first year with the Giants in 1983, recalls, "In training camp, whatever we ran, he would stay on you. And if he had to get on you, then he got on you, and that was it. He was tough. He didn't have a lot of rules. You better come ready to play, and you better do what you're supposed to do and stay out of trouble. He was a disciplinarian. He wasn't going to let you get out of line, that's for sure. I love the guy. I would have done anything for the guy." You hear the stories that some people hated him, but what made Bill so great was that he got to those players. He knew what buttons to push, and that's why some guys liked him, and some did not. But I loved the guy. He believed in me. He always challenged me, and I can't say enough great things about Bill Parcells. Any more thoughts on Bill Parcells, Matthew?
Yeah, the thing about Parcells is that he was very opportunistic. That's another thing. Like I said before, mentioned earlier, he was always looking for the next opportunity. He was never going to be a long-term coach. Now, you see, that was another difference. Belichick was willing to go. He's still with the New England Patriots today. But Parcells was always willing to jump the ship, though. I mean, at the tail end of his stint with the Giants, he was looking at opportunities. There was, you know, he was almost thinking of going to the Atlanta Falcons. And then, you know, when he left in 90, he had a job lined up, and then he suffered that heart attack. He had to have bypass surgery, and that knocked him out of the box for 3 years. And then finally, he got the Patriots job. But before he got that Patriots job, twice, he was literally on the edge of becoming head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, first in the early 90s and then later in the 2000s. And both times he left the Buccaneers literally at the altar there. So there was always that transitory nature. He wasn't willing to settle in one place and just maintain a dynasty like Tom Landry or Chuck Knoll or Vince Lombardi, or Shula. You know, it's just he was always looking for the next thing. And I think that's another reason why he didn't rank as high in the pantheon, because he couldn't settle down. He was always looking for more, more, and more. And I think that kind of told against him. And I think that kind of soured a bunch of owners on hiring him. There was always a bit of hesitancy, like, is this guy going to leave me in a lurch and all that? I mean, you know, and that was a factor there. That's why there was, like, you know, there was that a four-year gap between when he left the Jets and then when he got the Dallas job. I mean, there were some other opportunities. I mean, I remember one time when Sean Payton had to do that season when he was suspended because of the Bounty Gate thing. He wanted Parcells to fill in for him in the interim, but Parcells at that time, his age and all, he didn't have the fire in the belly anymore, so he took a pass on that. But I think that was a factor, I think, in Parcells, the fact he didn't rank higher according to my calculations.
Now let's move on to number 21 of the 50 guys you talk about in your book, Bill Cowher.
Yeah, I mean, when he was elected in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, people will wonder why are we putting this guy in? And I thought, why not? I mean, actually, I'm surprised it took so long for them to induct him. I mean, his record, and I talk about it in the chapter in my book, it exceeded many other coaches who were already inducted in terms of winning percentage, winning playoff games, you know, performance and all that. I don't understand why there would be any objections to Bill Cowher being inducted as a coach. To me, it should have been inducted much sooner, in my view. I mean, he was given a very difficult task of succeeding one of the greatest coaches in NFL history, Chuck Knoll, and yet he did it. He got the Pittsburgh Steelers back on the winning track, got them to their first Super Bowl appearance, in 16 years. Actually, during that 14-year drought when the AFC was always losing to the NFC, he was one of the few AFC teams that came so close to ending that drought before finally, 3 years later, it did end, you know, when the Denver Broncos won and all that. But, I mean, he came very close to winning that Super Bowl against Dallas. I mean, it was a close-run thing. Were it not for that interception, you know, they might have been able to pull it off. And then finally in 05, he was able to get them to their first Super Bowl championship since 1979. Now, the reason why I have Cowher at 21 is there were some lean seasons from like 98 to 2000. I mean, he had two losing seasons, in 98 and 99, three straight years of not making to the playoffs. That kind of weighed against him a little bit. Again, another losing season in 03, that weighed against him. His final year, he was only at 500, and again, he failed to make the playoffs, and finally he just quietly stepped aside. I mean, that's why I have Mike Tomlin ahead of him, in the pantheon, according to my calculations, because, like we've mentioned before, Tomlin never, ever had a losing season. But in many ways, he created his own personality when he took over at Pittsburgh, whereas with Chuck Knoll, was always cool, unemotional, very contained, never lost control or anything like that. Cowher brought emotion, fire, enormous fire in the belly, a greater emphasis on special teams, because when he was one of the finest products from the Marty Schottenheimer coaching tree. Very great product. I mean, he cut his spurs under Marty Schottenheimer, first as a special teams coach and then later as a defensive coach and all of that. I believe he and Dungy were like the two brightest pupils for Schottenheimer there. And, he reestablished Pittsburgh as a force to be reckoned with, in the AFC there. Got him, first six seasons, he led him into the playoffs, six consecutive playoff appearances. helped Ben Roethlisberger get into the NFL. I mean, that was part of the reason why the Steelers revived in 04 and 05 because they got Big Ben, you know, at quarterback there, working for the team. You know, I mean, his 15-1 season in 04, I think, is still the greatest performance in Steelers history, if I'm not mistaken. It still remains their greatest performance, even though they didn't make it to the Super Bowl that year. But he was just, he was a great coach. And, he got great running, he worked with the linemen, worked with the defense and all that. I mean, the same guy I interviewed for Parcells in the book, also talked about, Cowher, because he worked with Cowher too, and he gave Bill Cowher his due. Yeah.
Now, my notes, let's see. He had a five-year NFL playing career himself, really good, with the Eagles and Browns. 7 years assistant coach under Marty Schottenheimer with the Browns and Chiefs. And if you watch the 1986 AFC title game highlights, or the game, or actually in the 86 NFL season, there's a quote from Cowher, who was an assistant coach with Cleveland, and he says, "We've come too far to be denied." Of course, Cleveland lost that game. But anyway, so some of the players he had: Cordell Stewart, Jerome Bettis. He benefited from the Rooney patience, Rooney family, and he always said he was blessed to work for the Rooneys. Ben Roethlisberger, Troy Polamalu, Anton Randall L. He lost his wife early, and then very tragic. And I think he's still on the NFL. He's an analyst for NFL Today. Now, some of my quotes from your book: Joe Posnanski wrote, he was as Pittsburgh as Permonte Brothers sandwich. He grew up in Crafton, just across the river, watching Roberto Clemente throw out runners from right field at Forbes Field, watching Penguins defenseman Brian Watson get in savage fights, watching running back Dick Hoke trying to run behind a leaky Steelers line. Bill Cowher fell in love with football while watching those Steelers on television with his father, Laird. Another quote: it was during his stint with the Browns that Cowher drew the approving eye of defensive coordinator Marty Schottenheimer, who later told Joe Posnanski, "You hear about guys who are willing to die on a football field. Bill really would have died on the football field." Another quote: Dan Rooney wrote, "He was young, only 34 years old, but that was a plus. Bill Cowher also had an infectious enthusiasm. He wanted to win. What's more, he even looked like a Steeler. With his jutting jaw and chiseled features, he reminded me of our old logo, the one that depicted a rough, tough, brawny steel worker walking on an I-beam." And one more quote somebody here. He said, "He would get into your face. He would get that look on his face, and he would get after you. If that was a costly penalty or missing an assignment or something, that he would let you know. But once again, if you did something good, he would give you a pat on the back, so sometimes you needed that." Okay, so what else can you say about Bill Cowher, Matthew?
I think to echo that quotation, yeah. You see, Noel would not give you that pat on the back. I think that's one thing that drove Terry Bradshaw crazy, because he needed some love. He needed, a hug. He needed a pat on the back. Cowher would give you that pat. He'd give you the love, but also he'd give you that, he'd give you the anger too. But the thing is, whatever you got, you got it because you deserved it and all of that. So that's what set him apart from Chuck Noll. He would let his emotions flow and all of that. For good or for bad, he would let his emotions out. And the team reflected those emotions. I mean, they played with passion. They played with fire. They were not an emotionally contained team. There was, there was a spark there. And that spark is what helped them become winners and eventually two-time Super Bowl appearances. And, of course, 2005 Super Bowl champions and all of that. It was that passion, and that's what made him the great coach that he was.
Okay, we have comments here. Kenneth from Peoria, Arizona: Vince Lombardi, Mike Ditka, Bill Belichick, Chuck Noll, Bill Parcells. This is by far the top of the bar, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Lombardi. I mean, Ditka actually is further down the pantheon and all that, because the big mistake he made was coaching in New Orleans. That really damaged him in the eyes of my system. You know, we talked about Parcells. And who else was mentioned in that list again? Ditka, Belichick, you know, like Lombardi had that consistency. He could maintain and maintain the high, you know, for a long, prolonged period of time, unlike Ditka or Bill Parcells.
Okay, Lance from Pensacola, Florida. Tony Dungy has to be high on your list. John Gruden took his team and won a Super Bowl down here.
Yeah, I mean, we talked before. I had Dungy, I think, was at ranked 13th in my pantheon there, and rightly so. But, I mean, Dungy, unlike Parcells, you know, had far greater was far more consistent in his performances than Parcells was. There was precious little. I don't think there was any drop off at all with Tony Dungy, or as there would be drop off with Parcells. But Dungy was much more gentler, but no less intense, but much more gentler in his approach, more contained. And that's why I think that's the source of his consistency and his consistent excellence. But Dungy's weakness was very poor performance and postseason until finally he won the Super Bowl in 06.
Frank from Independence, Missouri. Bill Parcells was way better than some of the coaches they have today. Look at the clown show in Arizona.
Yeah, well, I mean, he just, you know, he's absolutely correct. Actually, Arizona could probably use a Bill Parcells today and all of that. You know, but, yeah, Parcells was a product of his time. So, but, yeah, you have to give Bill his due, yeah.
Okay, we have area codes 303-914-617-858-732-412-267. Thanks so much, folks, for listening. Albert from Poway, California. Chuck Knox, my man, and Don Coryell.
Yeah, they'll be featured. Wait, the thing is, though, they're in the 40s, so we got a long way to go before we get to those guys. But we'll talk about them. You know, they're in the top 40s. Okay, top 40s. Lack of playoff luck. That's the reason why. Lack of playoff luck because neither man ever reached the Super Bowl. That's the difference.
Yeah, so tonight we've been talking about Bill Parcells, Bill Cowher, and I have to say that, I guess Parcells got a big hit. Well, he won a couple Super Bowls, and he developed a big, you know, pride is always an issue, and I think that was with him probably a problem. But he was definitely entertaining, you know, and so,
yeah.
I mean, people want to be entertained, and he was funny, and so, and I think people, so that's what I would say about him, that he not only had, but then he kept moving around, yeah, so he had sort of this restlessness and maybe was looking to move on all the time. So, but anyway,
yeah.
I'd say, and Cowher, Bill Cowher, yeah, it's nice to see him around with that friend of mine, Brent Lessheim's always talking about his jutting jaw.
Yeah.
And yeah, and Cowher didn't coach a long time. But definitely, I guess
15 years. I mean, that's 15 years. That's extraordinary. I mean, the average NFL coaching career is 5 years. So he coached 15, and for one team, I think that's pretty good. Extraordinary, especially.
Right. But it's not like, yeah. And I think I think of the other guys who coached for like 30 years. But you think, wow, it's got to take an awful lot out of you. But so both these guys, Bill Parcells and Bill Cowher, really important, and there and I can remember both of them, and of course Cowher's you still see on Sundays.
Yeah A thing about Parcells, he'll remind you of, if Bobby Knight, the great college basketball coach, had been a football coach, he would have been Parcells, and if Parcells had been a basketball coach, he would have been Bobby Knight. But the thing was, there was a difference. Parcells did not possess Bobby Knight's insane violent urges. He wasn't one for throwing chairs at referees, you know, at umps or referees like not Bobby Knight did. I mean, Knight destroyed himself. Parcells never destroyed himself. Sometimes he priced himself out of his own orbit, but he did not have that self-destructive urge that Bobby Knight had. But, you know, the two were bosom buddies. In fact, Bobby Knight wrote the foreword to one of Parcells' early memoirs, his Chronicle of the 1986 Super Bowl season. They were friends.
And your current project, you're working on the greatest MLB managers of all time. Is that right?
Yes. I'm presently working on it's going to be called Patriarchs of the Dugout, Baseball's Greatest Managers. And God willing, you know, hopefully if the world don't come to an end, it should come out on April Fool's Day 2026. And that's not an April Fool's joke.
Well, looking forward to that. That'll be wonderful. Our guest tonight has been Matthew DiBiase. We've been talking about, again, his book, Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches, 2022. Matthew, the time has flown. We are out of time. Do you have any final words tonight for our audience?
Stay dry. It's rainy weather out here on the East Coast. And, again, look up for my books up on Amazon, Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches, or just type in my name, Matthew DiBiase, D-I-B-I-A-S-E.
Wonderful having you on the show so much. And we've got you scheduled July 25th, 4 weeks from tonight. We'll talk about Mike McCarthy, who was the Packers coach and currently the Cowboys coach, and Bud Grant, the Vikings coach. Next week, the show is going to be on Monday. It's July 3rd instead of Tuesday. And, again, we'll have the center fielder for the coolest MLB team of all time, the Oakland A's from the early 1970s. Thanks again so much, Matthew, for coming on, having a wonderful show again tonight.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's always fun and it's always a privilege. Thank you and God bless you.
God bless you. Wonderful NFL history. Tremendous work you've done. And I just love talking NFL history with Mr. Matthew DiBiase. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks again so much, Mr. Matthew DiBiase.
Thank you and amen.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.